couple of days ago, we read from the Sermon on the Mount, "Do not judge and you will not be judged." In today's gospel, which is taken from the very same sermon, we are told to judge. So what is happening here? Clearly there are different ways of judging. Some are not appropriate for us, that's reserved to God, and some are our responsibility. When Jesus said, "Do not judge," he meant, don't put yourself in the place of God or come to conclusions about things you cannot know about others. You don't know what's in their heart. You don't know what God knows. You don't see what God sees. So give people the benefit of the doubt. Don't come to rash conclusions. But in today's gospel, he's talking about a different kind of judgment. He's talking about evaluation of people's behavior and the practical consequences of what they do. So he says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing," meaning they look good, they might even look very holy, "but underneath are ravenous wolves." They really are dangerous, destructive people. It's quite striking when you think of the passages we've heard just in this week alone, how often Jesus does use critical terms about people. He accuses people of being hypocrites, even his own disciples. Yesterday he said, "Don't throw your pearls before swine," or "give what is holy to dogs." Well, who are these swine? Who are these dogs? He's talking about people now. And then here, he says, some people are wolves in sheep's clothing. Some people are rotten trees. That sounds awfully judgmental. Now, remember, there's two different kinds of judgment. There's the kind of judgment that only God can make, and that we are to not touch. Ultimately, that's the kind of judgment that is reserved to Judgment Day. We call it Judgment Day because God makes a judgment about everyone in the end. But then there's the kind of judgment which involves this kind of distinguishing between good fruit and bad fruit, between good trees and bad trees, between false prophets and true prophets. We have to make judgments like this as best we can. It's sometimes not easy because we don't see that well. Now, we sometimes use this language of good fruit and bad fruit. We apply it to things in the world, technology, for example, or movements, or political positions, or things like this. So sometimes people will say things like, "Well, I will never use Google because there's so much bad fruit," or "I'm boycotting Facebook because there's so much bad fruit." Okay, that's a legitimate conclusion for people to make. But remember, it's not the technology itself that is the bad fruit. It's the bad use of the technology. So the church is always a bit more balanced in its dealing with technological advances. The church typically says, use it for good, use it for the kingdom. If it's not being used for the kingdom, well then don't participate. So a more nuanced approach to technology is, well, I won't get involved in the use of this technology for what is evil or what is rotten, but I can still use it for what is good. So, but that's, each person has to make his or her own decision about that. In this gospel, Jesus is not talking about movements or technology or advancements. He's talking about people. He's talking about false prophets, people who misrepresent the truth in a destructive and dangerous way. And the scriptures are clear that there will be people like this in every age. So beware of them. Beware of them. It's a hard it's a hard topic to discuss too deeply, because eventually someone's going to say, well, who are these false prophets? Why don't you tell us their names? And I'm not in a position to do that. But that is the work very often of leaders in the church. The Pope and the bishops have to, for our sake, sort out who is speaking the truth or who's speaking in the name of the church and who is not. So sometimes the Vatican will say, such and such a theologian, his works are not approved. Well, it's a very polite way of saying, that's rotten fruit, that's bad fruit from a rotten tree. Usually those sort of declarations only come after a long process of discernment and also discussion with the people involved. Because in this world, it's possible for rotten trees to convert, to repent and start producing good fruit. That can happen, so we always have to be patient. Well, the ultimate judgment we have to make is our judgment of God Himself. Is He trustworthy or not? And in this field, Abraham shines as a great example. So we're following the story of Abraham. He's still called Abram in today's first reading, but we're following the journey of Abram in his effort to be faithful to the Lord. And you can see what happens in this reading. There are two great promises given to Abram. In fact, they're repeated in this reading. One promise is that he's going to have descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. And the other promise is that he's going to inherit the land. So he's going to have descendants and he's going to have properties. The first promise about descendants, Abram questions it. Now this is, God has already made this promise. And so far, nothing has happened. So when he repeats the promise, Abram says, well, what good? What good is this going to be? I'm still childless, and so my steward will be my heir. You have given me no offspring. Abram puts it right out there in a very direct way. You have given me no offspring. He said you would, and you haven't. Now, he's not doubting him. He's just confronting him with the facts. You have given me no offspring. And the Lord repeats the promise. It's a striking thing. He doesn't say, okay, here are some offspring. He says, you will have offspring as numerous as the stars. And this is where Abram rises to the occasion. It says here, Abram put his faith in the Lord, who credited it to him as an act of righteousness. Abram decides he's going to put his faith in the Lord. He's going to trust the promise of the Lord, even though he has not seen any evidence that it's going to be fulfilled. Now, what is happening here is not an irrational decision on Abram's part. It's a faith decision. He's not saying, this makes no sense, so I'm going to do it. He's saying, I believe that the one making the promise is trustworthy. That's faith. And it makes it possible for the one making an act of faith to leap over the lack of evidence. That's what we're called to do. Walk by faith, not by sight. Abram is the great example. And because of his faith, he is considered righteous or just. St. Paul, in his letters, way up into the New Testament, points back at this action, this faith decision of Abram, and says, this is the model. If you want to be just, if you want to be righteous, if you want to be saved, you have to have faith. We're not saved by what we do to prove that we're holy or to win God's favor. We're saved by putting our trust in the Lord, and He's the one who saves us. So if you read Paul's letter to the Romans, he refers specifically to this verse in Genesis. Abram put his faith in the Lord, and it was credited to him. So faith justified him. Since we're in the year of Saint Joseph, I think it's worth applying this verse also to Saint Joseph, because he did this exact same thing. Joseph, without any evidence, put his trust in the one who made the promise. It's exactly the same decision to transcend sight and live by faith, a journey by faith. So we ask Saint Joseph to guide us in this way. Okay, so that's the first promise, progeny, or descendants, and Abram believes. The second promise is, God says, I'm going to give you this land as a possession. And Abram again questions it. Well, how am I supposed to know this? I mean, that's a great promise. I'm not doubting it, but I mean, there's no evidence. I'm wandering around here as an alien, and you know, this land is owned by the Chaldeans and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Jebusites and all these people. How am I supposed to know that I'm going to actually, or that my descendants are going to inherit this land? And here, God sets up an ancient ritual, which was known to Abram, not so familiar to us, but the ritual known as cutting a covenant. We usually say making a covenant, but the Hebrew language calls it cutting a covenant, and that's because it involved cutting. You cut the animals in half. The implication being, if you're not faithful to this agreement, this sacred agreement that we make, well, then the same fate will fall on you. So it's a pretty serious commitment to enter into a covenant. So what looks like a very weird behavior here, cutting these animals in half and then sitting there while the birds are eating them and they're rotting in the sunshine, that's not as weird to Abram as it is to us. And it's actually evidence of God committing himself to his promise. God, represented by this fire pot and this flaming torch, passing between the cut animals, he's saying, I'm binding myself to my promise, Abram. And so you can trust me. A covenant was trustworthy a promise as could be made in the culture of the time. Now, we skipped over the verses where it says this isn't going to take place for 400 years. I don't know if it's good to look in the scriptures and read the verses that are skipped over. God tells Abram clearly, your descendants are going to get this land, but not for 400 years, or they says four generations. But we know he's referring to the Israelites' time in Egypt, and then they're brought back to the promised land. So God is faithful to his promises, but he's faithful in his own time and in his own way. That's why, in order for us to live according to his promises, we have to trust him. We have to put our faith in him. Otherwise, we will make the mistake of misjudging the Lord, considering him a rotten tree bearing bad fruit. That's a danger. And many people in our times judge the Lord as being untrustworthy. He doesn't do what we want him to do. He's not taking care of us. He's leaving us in a pandemic. He didn't heal my children or whatever thing we want him to do that he doesn't do. And so he's proving himself untrustworthy. Remember on Sunday when the apostles were in the storm in the boat and Jesus is sleeping and they come running to him and they say, well, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? Do you not care? It's on the threshold of a judgment against Jesus, right? They're not saying you don't care. That would be a judgment. They're saying, do you not care? I mean, the evidence to us now is that you don't care. You're not taking care of us. So they're on the edge of a rash judgment of him. But of course, Jesus wakes up and does an extraordinary miracle and proves to them that he's trustworthy. And then he turns the tables on them and says, well, do you still not have faith? Do you still not have faith? Do you still not trust me? Even now that I've calmed the waters and stilled the winds? Okay, so the question here, yes, Jesus talks about false prophets, and we have to keep our eyes out for false prophets. We have to make judgments about what is good fruit and what's bad fruit as far as we can. But ultimately, we have to judge whether God is trustworthy or not. The right answer is yes, he's absolutely trustworthy. The right answer is the answer that Abram makes. He puts his faith in the Lord, and it's credited to him as an act of righteousness. Abram, because he has faith, is justified. That's the right answer. But we each have to make that decision ourselves. So scriptures are telling us, Abram's telling us, St. Joseph is telling us, the church is telling us, put your trust in the Lord. Put your trust in him. Don't make a rash judgment of him. Don't doubt him. Don't consider him a rotten tree. You can really build on, with certainty, the goodness, the love, the mercy of God.